Ah, we're good now. Hey, I want to we're just going to do some summary work today. I thought this is the last class for the summer break, and I just wanted to do some summary work with y'all today. So we're just going to summarize kind of what I've talked about in the last 7 months, and then we'll have lots of audience participation today. So I'm just telling you that, no test or quiz, just audience participation.
Can I say, I don't know if I speak for anybody else. I know you and your family are very excited for the break, but we are very sad.
Well, thank you for saying that. Thank you.
Yeah,
actually,
second that emotion.
Thank you. Thank you, Chris.
I saw that.
Thank you. Okay. Hey, y'all, this is the outline of where we're going, and as I said before, this got submitted as a second book proposal a couple of weeks ago. So my idealistic hope would be that B&H would give another thumbs up. I'd spend the summer writing this, but of course that's all out of my hands at this juncture. So, but this is the outline, basically, of the book. We've gone through those first three sections, and what we didn't get to was here. And what I want to do today is talk a little bit about, I want to go back through fame, intimacy, beauty, and strength. Oh, sorry. Fame, intimacy, beauty, and strength. And then I want to talk a little bit about living with the ache. And then let y'all just sort of talk back to me is where I want to go. And then, of course, in the book, we kind of go there, which are sort of the deeper aches for father and home. So let me just do some summary things, and I'm going to throw some other things up on the screen here. Of course, the unspeakable ache is the central core of who we are. It's the central core of every human being you've ever met. It's the core of our children, of our parents, of our friends, of our spouses. It's what I call raw, unedited desire. And it's the longing for a life we really don't presently experience. And that ache becomes sort of the guiding force, really, of our lives, what we do with it and what we choose to do with it. And fallen humanity, it's usually a tragic choice. In fact, so much of what we do with our ache here is the start of our idolatry and really the start of our depravity. And then kind of where we talked about it is that if we listen really carefully to what the ache is telling us, it'll be like a compass that points us north, really back to the Lord. And that's where, and actually beyond this life. And the words I put it this way, the following the ache and tracing it this way is the path to all true holiness and wisdom. Not choosing to go this way is the path to all degradation and sadness. So that's really how much of a fork in the road this is. But we talked about the fact that this ache, this unspeakable ache, sort of spreads out into various sorts of desires. It's not just one thing. And that's why we kind of trace it through here. So I want to talk about throw up a couple of the working definitions. And here the ache for fame that we talked about as the ache. The longing for a life of impact and significance, a life of making a difference in the lives of others, and of others noticing that and celebrating us for that. And we just want to be known as leaving a mark. And that's just such an important longing we have. And then we looked at this one, the ache for intimacy. And this is my working definition for this one, the longing to know the hearts of others and be known by them. And in that knowing, that unveiling, a connection happens, a bond that seizes us with its wonder and strength. For here in that bond, we feel safe, affirmed, and alive. And we talked a long time about that and how to kind of pull that apart. And then finally, we went to this one. We sort of started this one, the ache for strength and beauty. And I put these together because these are tied to our gender differences in men and women. And here are some working definitions here. The ache for strength first. It's the longing for someone that touches our need for protection, rescue, provision, for someone outside of us to admire, and for a man, it is the ache to become like this himself. And of course, we entered this topic briefly looking at our longing for heroes, our disappointment, and Jesus as the great hero. And then finally, this one, I have such a problem defining beauty. And I don't think I'm alone, because I said every time I try and define beauty, I end up with the word beautiful. Of course, it's just like, you know, that's not, it's just, you know, to put words around it, it is the great mystery. So this is my best language. I'm not sure it's very good. But here we go. The ache for beauty, yeah, and sorry if it's long. The ache for beauty is the longing for exaltation, for something idealized, unstained by sin and brokenness that lifts us up beyond the confines of our present experience. When I see something beautiful, that's kind of what I feel. I get drawn up into something that seems unsullied and untainted by sin. Unlike strength, we don't just want to admire it outside of ourselves. We want to enter into it and be surrounded by it. And for a woman, it's the ache to become like this herself. So, and then we pulled that apart a little bit last week and talked about beauty and where it takes us and how it should really draw us to the beauty of the Lord. So that's kind of where we are. The one ache I did not have a chance to discuss here was the quest ache. And basically the idea here is that it's the longing, that sense that life is supposed to be lived as a journey, not as a routine to manage. And that we all sort of feel that and know that despite our fears. And usually I tell you the place where this really opens up to me often is in the pages of a good story or the scenes of an intriguing movie. I feel that ache. But that's a whole other thing we don't have time to go into today. What I really want to do today is just talk briefly about living with the ache, and then let's have some discussion today. So let me track through the living with the ache as fallen humanity. And then let's talk. At some point, you have to start speaking about the unspeakable ache and start figuring out how to live with it, because we've all lived with it in some way. And the two fallen ways mankind usually lives with the unspeakable ache are these: we submerge it, or we hook it. And submerge it is what I call a pushing down motion, where I just don't want to feel this anymore. I don't want to deal with this anymore. This is too painful, too confusing, too difficult, and I want to call we bury it. The other motion is where you hook it to something that momentarily soothes the ache, momentarily sort of stops it. But this is sort of the beginning of all of our idolatry, and as idolatry know, it starts this whole downward spiral of deepening thirst and vanishing contentment. So let me give you just a few examples of how the hooking, submerging works with. Let's go back to fame. How does people submerge the ache for fame? Well, they submerge it by, you know, that desire to be noticed. And often this happens by people who haven't felt noticed in their life. And because it hurts so deeply, what they often do is they will deflect. They just sort of live invisible lives. They deflect compliments. They constantly run themselves down, and they let other people run over them. They have a weak sense of self, and it just hurt too much to keep this ache alive, and so they push it down, hoping it'll go away. Now, you know, for me, my mode of operation was often I hooked the ache for fame, to something that would make me feel significant. And when I first entered the ministry, this is exactly what I did. I hooked the ache for fame to this. It's like, finally I'm being noticed. Finally I feel significant. And it works for a while, as all hooking motions do, but at some point it comes back to haunt you and to really start to corrupt you. And for me, the way it ended up entangling my whole life, I began to use people. I began to constantly compare myself to other people, particularly other ministers, in terms of their speaking ability, in terms of the size of their churches. It ended up just feeling like death. It doesn't feel like life, even though I didn't know quite what was happening to me. Other forms of hooking the ache for fame are any form of ambition, climbing the corporate ladder, fishing for compliments, pushing others down to make yourself look better. All of these are sort of ways in which we manage and hook that ache for fame. Let's talk about the ache for intimacy a second, submerging and hooking. The ache for intimacy, this is very, in fact, probably everybody at some point submerges this one, simply because the violations of intimacy are so common, whether they come in the form of secrets being publicized by a trusted friend, being taken advantage of sexually, parents who criticize their children relentlessly, or enmesh them in their own issues and problems where intimacy doesn't feel freeing, it feels binding. Any of these sorts of things can be violations of intimacy. It just hurts. It just hurts so deeply, and we just push it so we don't have to feel that desire to be connected. But of course, that doesn't often last very long, and we come back up. Often, the other way we do this, we hook the ache, and the way this often happens is we'll tie it, and we've all done this probably at some point during early adolescence or even on into adulthood. We'll tie the ache to one sole person that's like, this is how we're going to finally get love. And we become obsessed, we control the person. Also, many of our idols that we struggle with in our lives, whatever possession or activity, function as a substitute for this bond of intimacy. It's a place we go to feel somewhat alive, like we would with intimacy. It's a substitute. And of course, it doesn't work very well, but it's, you know, it works for a while. My own compulsive need to exercise, particularly running, was often the way I handled my own ache for intimacy. It kind of was my substitute. Finally, the ache for strength. Let's talk about submerging and hooking for just a minute. I think every man or woman struggles very deeply here. And for men, how they submerge or hook their ache to be strong, you'll submerge it simply by running from it. I just run from it. And because the responsibility and the cost that it may entail, what will be expected of me if I really truly own my strength. But often it's submerged because it's never been called out by a father or another older male. But men not only submerge it, they hook it, what I call false strength. They'll do something to make themselves appear strong. And this is sort of the beginning of the mask wearing for many men, whether it's sort of trying to replace inward strength with some sort of physical strength, whether it be prowess in a sport, exaggerating stories about accomplishments, chasing after a woman, plunging into pornography. All of these are things that men try to feel strong with, but it never works. They'll hook it to something. And again, I think the same pattern holds with women. They'll submerge the ache for beauty, running from it by masculinizing themselves in some way, or simply self-destructive thoughts. They'll hook the ache to something, often to outward beauty, hoping that the outward will somehow substitute for the inward. In addition, women will sometimes give themselves away to someone, often another man, in the hopes that by feeling loved, I'll feel beautiful. This is the reason why I think women choose to stay in relationships that end up destroying them. All of this, and I say all of this, y'all, because these are all the twists and turns this thing takes. And this is just a sampling of, you can fill in your own story of submerging and hooking. We all have them. The one thing we're never told to do with all of these aches is this. It's the one thing that never occurs to us. It doesn't. It certainly didn't to me. I just want to read you some scriptures here. Psalm 33:20. We wait in hope for the Lord. He is our help and shield. Psalm 130:5-6. I wait for the Lord. My soul waits. In His word I put my hope. My soul waits for the Lord more than the watchman for the morning. Isaiah 8:17. I will wait for the Lord who is hiding His face from the house of Jacob. I will put my trust in Him. Psalm 27. Wait for the Lord. Be strong and take heart and wait for the Lord. And y'all, these verses and many more like them, it's just telling us to stop these maneuvers and do something very different. And let me tell you what it feels like. It feels like my skydiving at 14,000 feet. When you choose to take the ache and wait on God, that is usually, not always, but usually what it feels like. It's the grittiness of true faith and the risk of true trust, where I'm taking what is most precious to me what hurts at times so deeply, and I'm simply going to trust God with it. I'm going to trust that He's going to come through in a way that I don't understand and in a way that I don't see. And if we choose to do this, a couple of things come to light in the process of choosing to wait and let God point us in the direction we need to go. One is that the pain doesn't kill us. This used to tell my cross-country runners this all the time. It's going to hurt, but it's not going to kill you. And it's interesting enough, when you said that, it's sort of like it clicked. Yeah, this does really hurt, but it's not going to kill me. The ache will not annihilate us if we'll sit in it. It won't. In fact, what it will do is it will lead us to the deep wisdom. And it'll teach us of things that we can't learn in any other way, particularly the wisdom that God wants to give us Himself. But secondly, when we choose to wait, something remarkable over time starts to happen. And this is the only way I can, this is my best language for it. What happens is what I call the deep freedom of heart. It's the recovery of choice. Our heart becomes detached from both the submerged way of doing it, from the unhooked. The heart surfaces and remains unhooked. And there is a freedom of desire that we have never known. It's delicious and it's haunting. We find ourselves longing for what God wants. We find ourselves, you know, the Lord's Prayer becoming true in our lives. May Your kingdom come, Your will be done. I mean, we really, really want that. And then finally, that verse out of Psalm 73 that perplexed me for years, all of a sudden, you begin to think, maybe I'm feeling this, which is simply this. Psalm 73:25. Whom have I in heaven but You? And on earth has nothing that I desire besides You. We begin to go there. We really begin to go there. Okay. I'm going to stop here. And that was my summary. And here's what I want us to do. I want us to do a little more formalized discussion. And let's each take something to write on. And I'm going to throw back up the original outline here. And I want y'all to put words to, and y'all want to pass these around too? I've got some writing utensils here. Taylor, can you pass these around to everybody? Can y'all take a minute and do a couple of things for me? One, put words to something important that you want to take with you from just all the conversation about the unspeakable ache with you into the summer. And let me throw this back up. There we go. Something that you want to, just one important idea, then you put words to it, just from our conversation about this whole thing. And then if you have a question, and interestingly enough, questions are always harder to come up with statements. But I would love for you to come up with a question that you would like to ask about this, because the conversation, bringing up this topic, always brings up a lot of questions. So let me let y'all just, I'm going to stop here.